We are going to continue our discussion of bonds with bond pricing, valuation, and yields. It's time to start doing the calculations. And we're going to find that the calculations are not that difficult. Certainly, some are very straightforward. The trickiest ones are going to look very familiar. Aha. So let's get started on slide number 2, bond yield. Bond yield is one of the most important factors in bond valuation. I think it's the most important factor. What income is the bond paying? Because that's why we buy bonds, right? Yes, of course, there's an opportunity for capital gains if interest rates fall, but over the long sweep of time, income is what you receive from bonds. And when the bond is matured, you're only going to get back the par value. Given that most all bonds repay their principal without incident, the valuations calculated using bond yields tend to be very predictable. The unpredictable factor in bond valuation is the future direction of interest rates. However, for the many people who hold on to their bonds until the maturity, until they get their principal back, the direction of interest rates is unimportant to them. They are mostly interested in the income and are not generally affected by the direction of interest rates, since they have no intention of ever selling their bond before they mature. You are only concerned about changing interest rates if you intend or you are forced to sell your bonds before they mature. And we've made mention of this, but let's repeat it again. There are people who are being paid tremendous sums of money to incorrectly predict what will happen to interest rates. So in my humble opinion, it's very speculative to think that you're going to be able to outwit the experts and predict where interest rates are going to go. Yeah? So when I buy bonds, which I don't really do because they're really boring, but I am looking for interest, and I hope you do too. Types of bond yields. Now, here's where it gets a little tricky, but not that tricky. We've already made mention of the nominal yield, the coupon yield, the coupon rate, the nominal rate. That's the stated rate of the bond. That does not change. It is fixed. Now, there are a few, just a scant few of bonds that are called floaters, that where the interest rate actually does change, but we're not even going to mention them. Oh, I already did. Just in this class, all bonds are fixed. Okay, well, what are these other rates that we're discussing, these other yields? The current yield, the yield to maturity, the yield to call. Well, remember, the yield, the nominal yield, the current rate, the coupon rate, that doesn't change. It is fixed. What changes? The price of the bond. So as the bond's price changes, so do these current rates and yield to maturity and the sister yield to call. When we discuss municipal bonds, we need to take a look at what is called the taxable equivalent yield. So we will get to that when we discuss in detail the calculations for municipal bonds. Okay, so let's take a look at the nominal yield. This is review. We also call it the coupon yield, the coupon rate. Remember clipping your coupons? This is the named nominal interest rate of the bond. You take the annual interest rate divided by its par value, and that gives you what the bond is paying in absolute dollars. So if it's a 8% bond, paying $80, that's $80 divided by 1,000 or 8%, or take 8% times 1,000 and it gives you $80. And this is what I want you to remember, folks. This is why bonds are $1,000 increments. If it's a 3% bond, it's paying $30. If it's a 5% bond, it's paying $50. It's one of those very simple questions to answer once you know how it works. But remember, it's paying a 5% bond is paying $50 each year, but it's really paying $25 after 6 months and then another $25. Yes. Okay. Now, but the nominal yield is not as important as the current yield, the yield to maturity, and then the yield to call. The current yield, as we'll see, is the amount of current income that the bond provides relative to what we had to pay for it, relative to its market price. The yield to maturity, on the other hand, gives us the fully compounded rate of return earned by the investor over the life of the bond. Because we might pay a premium or a discount for that bond today, but when that bond matures, what are we going to get back? We're only going to get back the par value, the face value. So if we pay a premium for it, we might spend $1,100, $1,200 for a bond. We're only going to get $1,000 back. If we buy it at a discount, well then, not only are we going to get our interest, but when the bond is redeemed, we're going to get paid more than the bond is worth because the principal is fixed. Now, the yield to call is similar to the yield to maturity, but this takes into account bonds that possibly or probably will be called away from us. And these would only be premium bonds, as we'll see. They wouldn't call a discount bond away. That means interest rates are higher than what they're paying. So the bond issuer is not going to call a bond and refinance at a higher rate. That doesn't make any sense. So this would only be for premium bonds. So let's take a look at the formula. Very straightforward. You take the annual interest and divide it by the current market price of the bond, and that gives you the current yield. So let's say it's an 8% bond paying us $80 a year, $40 twice a year, selling at $800. It's a discount bond. Well, we take the $80 divided by the $800 market price, and that gives us a current yield of 10%. The nominal yield, the coupon rate, the coupon yield, the nominal rate, they all mean the same thing, is 8%. But because the bond is selling at a discount, the current yield is actually 10%. Today, this bond is paying me 10%. Even though it pays 8% on the original $1,000 denomination, $1,000 loan, we're getting this loan for $800. So we are getting paid 10% today. Cool? And the opposite is true if we were to buy a premium bond. If we were to buy that same 8% bond paying $80 a year, but had to pay $1,200 for that bond, 80 divided by 1,200 is 0.066666 or 6.67%. We like to see three digits at least, sometimes four, but don't just put 7%. That's not a very good, it's correct, but we like to see at least three digits of accuracy. Again, the nominal yield is 8%, but because we had to pay $1,200 for this bond, then we're only getting today 6.67%, the current yield, the current rate. Does that make sense? Do it. Stop. If you have to stop the presentation, stop. And then use your calculator and try it with 1,000, right? It's very simple. You put $80 divided by 1,000, you're going to get 8%. So if the bond is selling at par, then the current rate is equal to the nominal rate. The yield to maturity takes into account the price appreciation of the bond if the bond is purchased at a discount, or the price depreciation of the bond if the bond is purchased at a premium. And there are two primary methods of calculation. There's the bond pricing formula discussed later, combined with an internal rate of return approximation. It's more accurate, but difficult to do manually, and that's why we have spreadsheets, and we'll show you a spreadsheet later on. The yield to maturity formula on the next slide looks scary, but once you break it down, it's actually very easy. Now, I haven't taken the Theory 7 in a long, long time, but we had to know this formula for the Theory 7. It's an approximation, but it's pretty darn close. And at first blush, slide number 10, It looks scary. It's not. We're going to break it down, folks. It's not that scary. It's really just the current rate formula that we just looked at, but with a couple of added terms to take into account the fact that we might have paid $800 or $1,200 for the bond, but when the bond matures, we're going to get $1,000. So here's the same annual interest rate. Remember, in the coupon, current yield, we took the annual interest and divided it by the market value. Well, in this case, we're going to still take the annual interest, but instead of dividing it just by the market value, we're going to divide it by the average of the par value. In this class, the par value is always $1,000, and the market value. Well, how do you average two numbers, folks? Pretty straightforward. You add the two of them together and divide by two. So maybe we should add a little description. This is the average on the bottom of the par value and the market value. Okay? All right. Now, who's this bad boy up here? He's the scary one. Well, how come it's a minus sign up here and it's a plus sign here? No, they're two different things, folks. This on the denominator is at the bottom is the average of the par value and the market value. What this guy is doing is saying, look, you are going to get $1,000. That's where the par value comes in when the bond matures. But you had to pay a certain amount of money to get the bond today, the market value. So we take the difference between the par value and the market value, and then we divide by the number of years it'll take for that bond to reach maturity, for that bond to reach the par value. So once you break it down, it makes sense. You see, we're going to get $80 every year. But what's going to happen every year as we get closer and closer to the date of maturity? That bond is going to get closer and closer to $1,000. Do you remember the graph we saw? As you get closer to zero, it gets closer to par value, whatever the par value is. In this case, the par value is always $1,000. So if you take say this is that same $800 bond, but we know now that it's maturing in 10 years. Okay, we can calculate the yield to maturity. Take the $1,000 minus the $800, what we're going to get when it matures and what we had to pay for it today, and that's $200. Divide by the number of years, or 10 years, 200 divided by 10 is $20. So essentially what we're doing is we're adding 20 bucks every year to the annual interest. We're going to get $80 from the bond issuer. They're going to send us a check. Well, they don't send you a check anymore. It's all electronic. But the bond is going to accrue. The bond is going to become worth approximately. It doesn't work in the real life that way. Interest rates move all over the place. But let's just approximate it that every year for the next 10 years, the bond is going to be worth $20 more. So we're getting that. Now, we don't get paid that, but our bond is worth more. And if we were to sell it, we would, have a capital gain on that. So the $1,000 minus the $800 is $200 divided by 10, $200 divided by 10 is 20, add $20 every year. So that's $100 in the top. And what's the average of 1,000 and 800? 800, I'm sorry, 1,000 plus 800, 1,800 divided by 2, 900. Some of you can figure that out in your head. And if you do that, the 800 plus the 20, 100, divided by 900 gives us 0.1111 or 11.1%. Remember, we like to see at least three digits of accuracy. So the yield to maturity on a discount bond is actually higher than the current yield. Why? Because we might have paid $800 or $900 or $700. We're going to get $1,000 when the bond matures. And the exact opposite thing happens when we have a premium bond. This guy goes negative. This is the average of $1,000. Let's say it's a $1,200 bond maturing in 10 years. $1,000 plus $1,200 divided by 2, well, that's $1,100, the midpoint of the two. But in this case, $1,000 minus $1,200 is negative 200. Oh no, negative numbers. Oh no, what do you do with a negative number? You can handle them. Negative 200 divided by the 10 years it takes for the bond to mature is a negative 20. So every year for the next 10 years, we're going to subtract $20 from the $80 that we get in interest. You see, when you break it down, it's really not that difficult, in my humble opinion. Do it a couple of times, and I think you will agree with me. Now, if we do that, 80 plus a negative 20 is 60, divided by the average of 1,000 and 1,200, or 1,100, gives us 0.54545, or 4.5%. Remember, show us three digits of accuracy. So, wait a minute. The current yield on our 8% discount bond selling at 800 was 10%, but the yield to maturity was 11.1%. And the current yield on our 8% premium bond selling for $1,200 was 6.67%, but the yield to maturity was 5.45%. What's going on? How is that possible? Well, as we've described, it's actually fairly straightforward. The discount bond was purchased at 800, but will be redeemed at 1,000. So we're going to get an extra 200 bucks out of the deal. The premium bond was purchased at 1,200, but again, will be redeemed at 1,000. So we're going to lose $200 out of the deal. The yield to maturity takes into account the bond appreciation, if it's a discount bond, or the price depreciation from the premium price back down to the par value. You see, we might buy it at a discount. If we do, hooray, because we're going to get more when we redeem the bond. Or if we buy it at a premium, we're going to get less. And again, that makes sense when you stop and think about it and then do the calculations a few times and you will not have a problem with it. I know it looks scary. Now, what about the yield to call? Well, this takes into account the possibility of the bond being called away from us. But we only use these on premium price bonds because a bond issuer would never call in a discount bond. That would mean they were refinancing at a higher rate. That would be dumb. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think anybody's going to do that. Again, there are two methods of calculation with the bond pricing formula that we'll discuss later on in the second presentation, and the yield to maturity approximation, which is exactly the same as the yield to maturity formula. However, what we do is we replace the par value with the call value, the call price. In other words, the par value is 1,000, but they may make us pay a prepayment penalty. Remember the call premium from our chapter nine, our previous chapter's presentation? And then we don't use the number of years to maturity, we use the number of years to call. So it's the same formula as yield to maturity, except we replace the par value with the call value. So that means right here and right here, we got to change it to the call price, whatever that happens to be. And then change it to the number of years to call. Not the number of years of maturity, but the number of years to call. So in this case, that same 10-year bond that is selling for $1,200, paying us 8%, has a call premium of $85, which means we have to pay $1,085 to call it away if we're the bond issuer. If we're the bond holder, we're going to get $1,085 when it's called away from us. And there's a call protection period of 5 more years. So we're going to assume, we're going to say, you know what, these people are probably going to call in the bond when it's available to them. So let's replace the par value with the call price. 1,085 replaces the 1,000. And then let's replace the number of years to maturity with the number of years till the call is allowed after the call protection period. And so when you run those numbers, do the average of these two, subtract that from that, it's going to get a negative number, divide by 5, so subtract that result from 80, you get almost 5%, 4.99. In other words, the yield to call was less and typically will be less than the yield to maturity. Why? This is because if the bonds are called away before maturity, we would have less time to take advantage of the outsized interest income payments. So we're hoping the bond is not called away from us. At this time in the face-to-face class, we would stop and do the first couple of problems in worksheet number one, worksheet number two. So you can do that now or do it later, but do it, okay? And they're exactly the same as the assignment, and they'll be on exactly the same as the on what's the exam, on exam number four. Now, it's time to turn our attention to municipal bonds, muni bonds, tax-exempt, tax-free bonds. Oh, the IRS doesn't like that term, tax-free. Since municipal bonds are free from federal taxes, in order to effectively compare municipal bonds to other bonds, we must compute the taxable equivalent yield. Until you have done this, you're really not comparing apples to apples. If you compare a muni bond to a corporate bond and don't take into account the taxable equivalent yield, you are not comparing apples to apples. You're comparing apples to oranges or whatever the cliche is. There are two calculations, one for the federal, where these are muni bonds that are free of federal income tax, and then for the double tax-free, double tax-exempt bonds for investors that are domiciled, live in the state for which the bond is issued. So that's, for us, California, right? So if we live in California, buy California bonds, doesn't matter where, and up and down the state, doesn't matter, we do not have to pay federal income taxes. Well, that's always true of muni bonds. We also don't have to pay California income taxes. Cool. So here's the taxable equivalent yield for a tax-exempt muni bond. And this is a typical bond purchased anywhere in the country in possessions of the United States, Guam, Puerto Rico. You take the muni bond yield and you divide it by 1 minus the marginal tax rate. Well, here's the tricky part. You have to know what your marginal tax rate is. The higher the marginal tax rate, the higher the taxable equivalent yield, which is why they're very popular with people in very high tax brackets. So let's say we're in the 25% tax bracket. You take the muni bond yield, in this case 6%, divided by 1 minus 0.25, 25%, and that's 0.75, and that turns about to be 8%. What does that mean? That's the taxable equivalent yield. You'd have to go out and find a corporate bond paying 8% to do as well as a muni bond paying 6%. Well, now, wait a minute. The corporate bond's paying us $80, $40 twice a year. The muni bond's only paying us $60, $30 twice a year. How could the muni bond be equivalent to $80 worth of income from a corporate bond? Right, the tax man cometh. So on that $80, if you're in the 25% tax bracket, 20 of those dollars goes to Uncle Sam. So you see why our 6% muni bond is equivalent to an 8% corporate bond? Exactly. And by the way, don't ever do any calculations, tax equivalent calculations, on a corporate bond, please. It's bad for my self-esteem. No taxable equivalent yield on a corporate bond because corporate bonds are already fully taxable. Slide number 18. Taxable equivalent yield for both federal and state. Double tax exempt, double tax free. The formula on the previous slide only takes into account federal income taxes. So for us Californians, right, this might be an Arizona bond or a New York bond or a Florida bond. But if it's a California bond, if the municipal bond is free of both federal and state income taxes, then the taxable equivalent yield will be higher. Now, the formula on the next slide assumes you itemize deductions on your federal income taxes and deduct those state income taxes. Well, this is very typical for muni bond investors. Why? Because they're in high tax brackets. They have, you know, itemized deductions, You might come across somebody who doesn't work that way, but usually it does. If you don't itemize deductions, then the taxable equivalent yield will be a bit higher, and that formula is on the formula sheet for Chapter 10. So let's take a look at the more typical one. Now, I know it looks a little scary, but you just go into the middle of the parentheses and work your way out. This is the taxable equivalent yield for both federal and state taxes for somebody who itemizes their taxes, which, again, is the norm, not the exception when you deal with muni bond investors. So let's say it's that same 6% yield, we're in the 25% tax bracket and the 8% state bracket. So we just plug in the numbers. We go to the Fed rate is 25%, there's 0.25. The state rate is 0.08, that goes there. 6% is the yield, that goes right over here. So do the inside first, 1 minus 0.25 is 0.75. Multiply 0.08 times 0.75, and you get 0.06. Add the 0.25 to the 0.06. I'm just running through it in my head here, folks. I hope I don't make a mistake. 0.31. Check, make sure I got it right. 1 minus 0.31, you just work your way from the inside out, is 0.69, right? 0.69. And so you take 0.06 divided by 0.69, and you get 8.7 or so, 8.70 is really what we should do, because this rounds. You got to learn how to round, folks. Don't learn how to round. It doesn't look good for Southwestern. So I really should add a zero here just to make it look like I have indeed checked out that third digit of accuracy. But 8.7. And as we say, there's an alternative formula for those investors who don't itemize deductions on their tax returns, but they are the exception, not the norm. On the formula sheet, you will see both. Cool? This isn't that hard, is it? Do the worksheets, do the assignment. You'll find that they're not very difficult. So we burned through that maybe a little too quickly. I apologize if I lost you. Stop it, rewind it, go work through it again. And do now the, on the worksheets, the taxable equivalent problems, because when we come back, we will be treated to some very useful information, in my humble opinion, with regard to what is called the yield curve. And also we will learn how to calculate, how to value bonds based on their future income stream. What is the present value of the future stream of income that the bond is going to produce? Does that sound familiar? Remember, you can't leave Business 123, Introduction to Investments, without understanding and knowing how to calculate the present value of a future stream of income, the discounted cash flow model. See you in our next presentation, dear students.